Welcome to Double Take with Matt and Jake. This is Jake, joined by Matt, as always. We got a great episode, a lot to talk about. We got a basketball player from UC Irvine coming on, we had an awesome conversation with. Excited for you guys to check it out. March Madness is happening. Some big NFL stuff went down today, which is March 21st is when we're recording this. So,
yeah. Should be some good stuff going on.
Yeah, so we're going to get just right to the interview with Justin Wertner. He played basketball at UCI. Then we'll come back. We're going to talk about March Madness, our brackets, and then setting up for the rest of the Sweet 16 down to the Final Four. Talk about the Matt Ryan trade in the NFL and whatever, any other NFL stuff we want to talk about. So here's the Justin Wertner interview. All right, welcome back to Double Take with Matt and Jake. We're joined by former UC Irvine basketball player Justin Wertner. I said your last name right, Justin, right?
Yeah, Wertner. It's correct.
Okay, perfect. I know it's not the most complicated name, but still wanted to get it right. Appreciate you coming on, man.
Yeah, appreciate you guys having me.
Okay, so one thing I want to start with is always just recruiting. How'd you get to UC Irvine? Because I thought you grew up in San Diego, but UC Irvine is saying you're from Memphis, Tennessee.
Yeah, so kind of interesting story. Grew up in San Diego, summer of eighth grade and freshman year. My dad transferred out to Memphis, Tennessee. And to be honest, that's kind of where I felt like my basketball style and career kind of took off. Kind of a culture shock getting out to Memphis. But went out there for high school and, you know, basketball, they just play it at a completely different level. And there's a lot of high level players out there. So, from Memphis, graduated high school out there and, you know, went out there for my dad's job. So,
yeah, Memphis, I'm always interested in because it seems like it should sort of be a football place. And I'm sure the people are big football fans there, but the Grizzlies seem to have one of the best fan bases in the country. Did you see Memphis as like a real basketball city or just kind of depended where you were and who you were talking to?
I would say it's a little bit of both. Yeah. The Grizzlies going to the FedEx Forum. I haven't been to another arena like that. They are so engaged and they're crazy for their Grizzlies, but yeah, it's definitely a big basketball city. They pride themselves on, you know, football as well, but you know, if you talk to them and, you know, talk to the players and fans and parents, you know, they love their basketball just as much.
San Diego to Memphis is probably one of the biggest adjustments I can think of in the whole country.
Yeah, it's something I wasn't ready for it. I was shocked, culture shock, completely different environment. And I'd never been that far east. You know, the farthest east I probably had been was Utah. So, going from San Diego to Memphis, honestly, I learned a lot. I was able to meet a lot of people, but like I said, I felt like it was the best thing for me and, you know, mostly talking about basketball.
Yeah. Now, do you think basketball wise, because you said they play like a high level out there, did that make it step up or did you just kind of fall in love a bit more with basketball out there?
I would say I always had that passion. I was always outside trying to work on my game and shooting hoops. But like you said, it really was just the next level. Those guys matured early. So a lot of them were, you know, I knew a lot of people that were held back. And so you're playing against a way older age group in your grade, basically. And those guys knew how to play. So, I mean, it was kind of, I had to put my big boy pants on and get to work or I wasn't going to fit in too much. So, I classify myself and others as well classify me as a shooter. So going out there and being a shooter when they're playing inside and dunking on each other, you know, I felt like people liked that part of my game and it kind of helped spread the court a little bit.
Did your family, any of your parents or siblings, like, are you from a basketball family or was a lot of this kind of self-motivated, just something that you kind of found on your own?
So my dad played ball growing up. He played a year of JUCO. My sister played and my cousin actually played at BYU and my grandpa played in college as well. So I got a few people, but a lot of it was just, I love the game. I love watching it and learning, and I loved playing.
Were you trying to go back out to California for college, or did it just work out where that's where UC Irvine was at?
I would say I was trying to go more on the West Coast. So I was recruited by a lot of Southern schools, obviously, University of Tennessee, Memphis, some smaller mid-majors out there. But I knew eventually I just wanted to get back out to the West Coast and play ball out there. So it just happened to work out in my AAU circuit that UC Irvine was watching me, and, you know, they recruited me pretty heavily. So, you know, it felt right.
Now, I'm just reading your bio here on UC Irvine's website. So you served a LDS mission in Chile. Is that right?
Yeah. Served in Chile.
Both of us actually went to Chile as well on our mission. So that's sweet.
That's funny. I went to Osorno.
Okay. Right on.
So you were wet for 2 years.
Exactly. Yeah. It rained like crazy.
Do you think, and this is no research, that's probably not great to admit, but if you're getting recruited by Memphis and UT, do you think you could have gone to a bigger school out west if you hadn't gone on a mission?
Yeah, I think a lot of that, it just depended on the timing, right? So I felt like UCI worked out really well for me, and their style at the time, you know, fit me as coming in as a shooter, and I'd seen people be successful. But their timing of when people were leaving and coming after 2 years is what worked out the best for me. So I had a couple schools like West Virginia. They ended up being number one in the country that next year, but they called me late right before I was leaving on my mission. And, you know, they wanted a shooter, but yeah, I mean, it totally just depended on the timing, but I felt like it worked out for me. It was a good situation.
Yeah. Now I'm looking at UCI's conference, and it might have been a little different when you were playing there, but it's a lot of California schools, basically like all Southern California schools, except for a couple. Did you just take the bus to every game, basically?
Yeah, basically we did. We go up Pacific Coast Highway and go to Cal Poly and UC Santa Barbara. Probably the most beautiful drives you'll ever have playing conference basketball. And then we also went to Hawaii as well, so... it was basically you just drove. And then we had a couple schools like Fullerton and Northridge that were just within an hour as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, other than Bakersfield, everything looks like it's in a pretty nice part of the country.
Yeah, we got lucky. We loved those Hawaii trips. And going to Santa Barbara and Cal Poly, you can't beat that.
That's awesome. How were the fans at UC Irvine? I know some of the times with these, because they, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's no football team at UC Irvine, correct?
No, there's not.
Okay, yeah. So I bet that in some ways I feel like that plays to your advantage as a basketball team, because I feel like that's the event to go to at the university.
Yeah, it is. It's definitely, they definitely put education first, and which is great. So it was really hit or miss, and, you know, it depended on the year as well and what game we were playing, but it was pretty good compared to, I mean, we went to a lot of schools that we saw in the Big West and that I've seen in the WAC or just from like visiting, but seeing the WAC or the WCC where you have some teams that where fans aren't coming at all. So there were some schools like that, but for the most part, ours were there.
What school had the, I guess, loudest or best fan base? It can be either yours or one of the schools you played against.
So Cal Berkeley, when we played Berkeley my freshman year, that was pretty crazy. Just their arena, and they're kind of like on top of you. And they're pretty into it. And then also UCLA. I mean, UCLA is completely packed, and everyone's into their games and everything. So They were pretty engaged and pretty hardcore fans. Oh, and then also actually, when we played in the NIT my freshman year, Illinois State, they were supposed to go to the NCAA tournament and they felt they got snubbed. And their fans were like crazy, totally into it and going crazy. So Yeah, probably them as well.
Illinois State, I've been to Cal and I've been to UCLA, both awesome arenas, especially Cal. I know you mean being on top of it. Was not expecting Illinois State out of that answer.
Yeah, they're crazy.
That's sweet. Now, UC Riverside, that's like your quote-unquote rivalry game or like the big game in part just because it's so close to you guys, right?
I wouldn't say that as much. They're close, but it just depends on the year who kind of our rivalry game is. We, you know, Santa Barbara was a big one because we were both top in the conference, and then UC Davis and Cal State Fullerton when I was there, at least.
When you're watching, like, Cal State Fullerton just lost to Duke in the first round of this year's tournament. When you're watching those schools, do you kind of cheer for them, or are you like, oh, I'm glad they lost because you still have a little bit of something against them?
No, I mean, I knew they were going to lose to Duke. I think it's kind of cool. I mean, we obviously get an automatic bid. Someone from the conference does every year, but it's kind of cool. But you can kind of tell, you know, if playing a powerhouse like Duke. But they actually, you know, they didn't get beat super bad. It could have been worse. I've seen worse.
Yeah, they covered the spread, which for some people matters a lot. Who was the best player you played against? Is there someone we would know either from your conference or like one of the Berkeley or UCLA games that we would know who you played against?
So actually, Santa Barbara, he kind of came on later, but Gabe Vincent, he's the starting point guard for the Miami Heat now. Or at least right now he is. I know there's some people that are hurt, but he got hurt and tore his ACL, but he was at Santa Barbara. And man, he was just a freak athlete and could score from everywhere, and ended up being undrafted. And now he's on the Heat and he's playing super well. So he was, you know, super, super hard to guard. And even after a torn ACL, was one of the most athletic people out there.
That's sweet. Yeah, that's always crazy how people can go undrafted in the NBA especially, and then like make the team and do well on the team. That's always like, they have to be like legit good if they're taking that route. So that's impressive.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's, and Santa Barbara, I think they've had a few, I believe, I'm going to see if I can look that up, but I think Steve Nash might've come from Santa Barbara as well.
Or one of them. He was Santa Clara.
Oh, Santa Clara. Okay. Is that in your next conference?
No, that's actually the WCC.
Oh,
so that's, okay. Yeah, that's the same conference as BYU and San Diego. And
yeah, cool, awesome. That's cool, man. So you were a shooter. So does that mean you were a guard or did you play forward?
So I was a shooting guard in high school and college. Obviously, high school, I'm 6'5", so in high school, you know, I was – guarding the big guys every once in a while, but I was always bringing it up or pulling up from somewhere. So that's definitely how I got recruited and how I was successful.
That's cool. Now, what I think a lot of people when they hear shooters is like, oh, well, they just, you know, stand in the corner and shoot the ball, right? But I'm sure that, you know, going to college and trying to be a shooter, going up to Division I college basketball, there's a lot of adjustments in terms of how you had to move and kind of getting in position and getting those open shots.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, honestly, I would classify myself as a shooter, especially in college. But in high school, I would say I was a scorer, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I think to get to be a Division I basketball player, you have to be able to score. I mean, most of those guys, if you talk to them, could score. All of the guys average 20 points a game. But once you get into college, unless you're the elite of the elite, you know, the Gabe Vincents, you kind of find your role and you have to be good at a few things. It's hard to be the guy that can do everything. So it's definitely adjustments, but that summer back from my mission, you just become so much better. You're playing at such a high level and you're working on so many aspects of your game to where you develop into a whole different player. I mean, if I could have put that type of work in with those type of players, you know, my junior, senior year of high school, I mean, I would have been a, I like to think I would have been a Gatorade Player of the Year. It's just such a high level, and they just have, you know, I think this is most Division I programs. They have these set programs and schedules of how you're going to eat, how you're going to work out, when, with who. And I think it leads to a lot of success and has a successful track rate.
Yeah. That's interesting. Talking about like the way that you develop, you know, in college and how you could have done a lot of those things in high school, but either didn't have the knowledge or you just didn't have the access to those sorts of players. Do you have any advice for like high school kids that are trying to improve their game, trying to get to the next level, on ways they can, you know, develop some of those same skills without necessarily being able to have that level, that high level of competition?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of stuff out there right now to be successful. I think one of the biggest problems is that people have is they watch, you know, NBA or even in March Madness right now and try to just go out there and start jacking up shots and being like those guys. I think you really have to put in the work, even that if that's by yourself and you can't play against this top level talent. You can look it up on YouTube or whatever, look it up on the internet and find workouts to do to be better. And, you know, each day you're trying to hit a different goal and trying to better, whether that's hitting 10 threes in a row or 20 or 30, you know, always set goals for yourself. And then once you accomplish that goal, set another one.
What would you say was there one thing that was like the hardest jump from high school to college?
I think a lot of things, people always talked about it, but one of the hardest was just not being the guy anymore. I was the guy in high school. I was Mr. Basketball my senior year. We won a state championship. So, I mean, I was used to just having the ball in my hands and leading that team, being whatever. But I think the hardest transition is going from that to trying to find my role. We were on a high level team my freshman year, which I ended up actually redshirting in, but full of a lot of guards. So it's just kind of finding my role and my niche and figuring out where I belong on that team.
I forgot what I was going to say. Matt, you know what I mean?
Oh, no, you're good. I guess one thing that I was like asking with college players is how did you manage being able to do all the homework with the games and stuff? Because I like some of the people we've talked to, their workouts and between games and everything, that can be 20, 25, 30 hours a week almost, it feels like. And then UC Irvine, obviously, like you said, education is kind of the number one priority there. So I'm sure that they gave you support, but didn't necessarily let you off easy either.
Yeah, definitely. I think you definitely have the support as a student athlete, to where there's study halls and tutors available to you. But I think one of the things that's not talked about as much is they definitely give you a lighter load during that season. So that quarter where it's kind of crunch time for basketball and stuff, they try to help you find a little easier classes. But also there's time set up during the day. It's long days, but you know, I always say this even now being done playing basketball, but if it matters to you, you'll make time for it. There's time in the day. You just have to prioritize what you're going to do and when you're going to do it. And I think that was helpful to me and kind of where I had an edge on most 18-year-olds coming in as a 20-year-old and back from a mission. You know, I knew how to use a schedule. I knew how to prioritize my day by certain things I needed to get done versus things I could wait until tomorrow to do. So I feel like that gave me an edge to be more successful on the court as well as off the court.
My last question, maybe the most important one, is how is your bracket doing?
I picked Duke, so they've been doing all right. But I actually, you know, the Kentucky thing messed me up a little bit as well, losing to St. Peter's. So I actually have a friend that's on the staff there right now, so feel bad for him. Kind of a tough loss in the first round.
Yeah, good for St. Peter's, but that's got to suck for Kentucky.
Oh, yeah, And they were, I think they were ranked as high as number four this year. So that's a tough, they've had a tough last few years.
Yeah. Well, I had Tennessee winning the national championship. So at least you still got your champ in the bracket.
Yeah, there you go. It's a tough one.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you coming on, man. Again, Justin Wertner, former UCI player. I was like talking to players from like all over the country, different schools and stuff, especially I just remembered because I know your sister a little bit. So I just remember y'all are from California. I forgot the Tennessee thing. So that was very interesting to talk about. So appreciate you coming on, man.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Nope. All right. We'll be right back. All right. Again, that was Justin Wertner, played basketball at UC Irvine, which is, I think, a pretty campus. Irvine's an underrated city. Our cousin got married there. Do you remember that?
I do remember that. It's an interesting place. I even remember as a child being like, this is confused. I don't think it would have been confusing as an adult, but it's not like everything was pre-planned. So streets like really curve a lot. And so it's intentional. And so it's like things go places, but it's not like the grid system that we're used to.
Right.
So that was,
it's a cool place. Orange County is a nice place.
Interesting place, yeah. Very nice buildings.
So appreciate Justin Wertner coming on. Especially because it's March Madness, we want to talk to a former college basketball player. We're going to talk about our brackets really quick. Talk about Sweet 16 setting up heading into last weekend. Then we're going to talk about the Matt Ryan trade because I think that's a pretty big deal. Has a few ramifications. My bracket sucks, so we might more just talk in general about the brackets. I'm pulling it up right now. I don't know if I'm the guy to be giving advice. I guess there's not advice to be giving at this point. But let's just look at the games and see where we're at and see what we think is going to happen. The one game I think we're both looking forward to for very different reasons is UCLA North Carolina.
Yes, that's going to be a big game.
North Carolina steamrolled Marquette. Was killing Baylor before Brady Manick got ejected. Then Caleb Love fouled out, which was a dumb. Caleb Love thing was dumb. I get the Manick thing. But anyway, Baylor came back from 25 down, tied it. They went to overtime. Carolina ended up winning. UCLA's looked, it looks like they're at their floor. Like, it doesn't seem like they're playing their best, and they still handled St. Mary's pretty easily. Had a little bit of trouble with Akron, but still pulled that out as well.
Yeah, it was. I was glad they had their bad game against Akron as opposed to St. Mary's, that they seemed to kind of, they handled St. Mary's better, yeah. And this is important game for me because I have UCLA in the Final Four. I thought this would be a good way to pick up points because a lot of people had Kentucky going into the Final Four. Lucky for me, things didn't work out that way. Baylor's out, also shaping up well for UCLA. But North Carolina looks really good.
North Carolina's, they've been, ever since that Duke game, and even before the Duke game, they've really been on a tear. The Duke game being the last of the regular season in Cameron.
Yeah. See, I'm frustrated with North Carolina because last year they were an 8 seed and I picked them to beat the 1 seed and they just totally choked, like not even close. So I didn't have the confidence to do it this year, even though I sort of wanted to. I thought Baylor was a 1 seed that could get upset. And then they did it when I didn't pick them, which is annoying.
Yeah, the thing with North Carolina, my voice just cracked. The thing with North Carolina is Caleb Love is awesome. Armando Bacot should have been the player of the year in the ACC, was first team all conference. RJ Davis blew up in the Baylor game. He went off. He had like 17 points in the first half. I think he finished with 30. They're just not very deep, though. I don't really trust any of the guys who come in.
Well, the coach doesn't seem to either.
No. So they play the starters a lot. Leaky, Black, and Manick being the other 5 starters. The second half of the Duke game, they played the entire second half. So that worries me, especially with like foul trouble. We saw it with Baylor with Caleb Love ejected, or not ejected, but out for fouls, Brady Manick out. They kind of, not fell apart, the right word, but it really opened the door for Baylor to come back. And UCLA is a very good team. Obviously, everyone talks about Johnny Juzang. I think their point guard, Tiger Campbell, I think he's just a ultimate March Madness, like experienced point guard. Obviously, he was in the Final Four team last year. Good ball handler, good shooter, can run the offense well. I think I do think UCLA is going to win. I want North Carolina to win, but I think UCLA is going to win. I think Tiger Campbell is going to be a big reason because of that.
Yeah. No, I mean, I picked UCLA at the, you know, to go into the Final Four, obviously. So I obviously believe in them. And I do think playing North Carolina helps. I mean, I know we've talked about them being so good, but I just think, you know, playing your starters eventually, you know, that they get tired, right? And I think that UCLA being deeper, I think they can take advantage at the end of the game. We saw North Carolina let Baylor in at the end almost. Obviously, they had a player get foul out very early, surprisingly really foul out.
Yeah, it was like 8 minutes or something like that.
Yeah, they also had the player who was ejected. So obviously, that was a big reason of them letting UCLA in. They also very nearly let Duke in Coach K's final game. Now, obviously, they were hold on to win both of those games, but it is going to be interesting to see, do they build up a lead? How big of a lead do they build up, and can they hold it? So that's sort of what I'm going to be looking for.
Yeah, they've definitely let teams back in, and I think part of that is definitely the depth. I will say Caleb Love, the player who fouled out, he's in the rare Nick Bosa category of a younger person who I would wear their jersey. I think it's literally Nick Bosa and Caleb Love are the only two people.
So
that I think is going to be the best game of the weekend. Another one I'm excited about is Duke and Texas Tech.
Yeah.
Texas Tech is the favorite. They're the 3 seed. Duke looked fine. I honestly thought, other than Jeremy Roach, Duke didn't look that good. I think most people thought they looked better than me. I was just completely unimpressed by their game against Michigan State on Sunday, except for Jeremy Roach, the point guard, who I thought played extremely well and was a big reason that they won.
Yeah, well, it was an interesting game against Michigan State, just because I felt like Michigan State was able to stay in it and go on these runs when they were playing essentially perfectly. And that was kind of the problem they ran into, is that they had to play so well, you know, make 5-6 threes in a row to be able to get into it. Duke just has so much talent that is going to be tricky. Obviously, they're the more talented team, even including Texas Tech. But Texas Tech is obviously a much better team than Michigan State. So I think if Duke is going to want to win this one, they're going to have to play much better than they played against Michigan State.
They are. Texas Tech is one of the best defensive teams in the whole country. And this is their first year with their coach, Chris Beard, last year's coach, now at Texas. Chris Beard's the one who took him to the national championship game a couple years ago against Virginia. So good for Texas Tech being able to reload with a new coach and still be as good as they are. They've really turned into quite a basketball school, honestly. I kind of think everything is saying Texas Tech is going to win the game, and that's what I'm going to say is going to win. But like you said, Duke's a more quote-unquote talented team.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to be surprised if Duke win, but I think Texas Tech – I actually have Texas Tech in the national championship game. Again, my bracket's terrible, so I don't know what that means. But I think Texas Tech is good enough to get to and win the national championship.
Yeah, I think that they're good enough. It's going to be – and Gonzaga certainly looked vulnerable. So I think especially if Arkansas is able to pull off that upset against Gonzaga, I think that opens the door for them. And I think that's very, very possible, even though I've picked Gonzaga. I did pick Texas Tech in the Elite Eight, so I'm certainly hoping that they're able to make that happen.
Let's go to the Midwest bracket, which is Kansas, Providence, and Iowa State, Miami. I think Kansas, obviously Providence is good. Like, all these teams are good, so maybe I'm just overreacting. But I thought Kansas was one of the best teams in the country already. They are not having to play a 2 seed or 3 seed in their bracket because they've already lost. I think Kansas is just going to roll to the Final Four at this point. I don't see any of those teams. Now, I've been low on Miami, I think lower than most people. I think Miami's going to be playing Kansas in the Elite Eight. I don't see that being very close. So I think Kansas has a very, very good path to the Final Four and the national championship game from there.
Yeah, I think they're happy with it. I think they would rather play Iowa State than Miami. And then, you know, Providence is a solid, solid team. I think that is going to be one of the closer games of the Sweet 16 round. But it's like that Duke Michigan State game. Providence may be able to pull off a really, really great game. Kansas is just going to be so much more talented than any of these teams, really, that as long as they play, you know, close to what they're capable of, I think that they're able to pull it off.
I think the best potential Elite Eight game, I think Gonzaga versus either Duke or Texas Tech would be good. But I think we're both looking at a potential Villanova Arizona Elite Eight matchup. I know you think Villanova's going to win the national championship. I thought Arizona, I should have picked Arizona. I'm annoyed. I think Arizona can win the national championship.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, Houston and Michigan are both very good teams, so that's not a lock. But I think Villanova, Arizona, Elite Eight would be the most competitive potential Elite Eight game. Those are my thoughts. I would pick Arizona, but Villanova is so good. Gillespie's awesome. Jay Wright's obviously one of the best coaches in the country. And has been there such a long time at Villanova. Villanova's a cool campus.
I've never been.
It's a little Catholic school. It's kind of crazy that, because it's smaller, like it's private school, obviously. So it's kind of crazy that Jay Wright has built like a national powerhouse out of that school. Good for him.
Yeah, well, these Villanova kids, like, I don't think Villanova has as much talent as Arizona. I don't think they have as much talent as Gonzaga or Duke. I just think that they buy into the culture, they work hard, they play really, really smart, and they just kind of know how to work together. And I think a lot of that is Jay Wright. I think Jay Wright deserves a ton of credit, but these athletes deserve a ton of credit, and I think we know these athletes deserve a ton of credit because they continue to go to the NBA and outperform where they get drafted.
Yeah.
You know, Jalen Brunson's turned into a really good player. Josh Hart has been solid for Portland, even though Portland's been pretty terrible. Dante DiVincenzo's still in the league, he was a really good player for the Bucks. I haven't heard from him since he was on the Kings, but I blame that on the Kings.
That's not his fault.
You know, yeah.
I was going to bring up Jalen Brunson. Yeah, because Jay Wright recruits like 3 or 4 year guys who want to be there. So it's like not – one's not better than the other, but like Kentucky does the opposite. Duke does the opposite, is trying to do the opposite. And Jay Wright isn't messing around with that. He's getting guys who aren't as quote unquote talented, but like want to be there. And then in the NBA, the drafts, especially like age is kind of a death knell. Like anyone who's not a sophomore, it's like, oh, why are they not a sophomore? Why didn't they come out? But all those guys you mentioned were upperclassmen, unless I'm missing on Josh Hart. I think he was an upperclassman as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they just stay in the program, want to be Villanova, want to be with Jay Wright, and he does a great job there.
Yeah. Eric Pascal, Donovan Mitchell's friend.
Eric Pascal played at Villanova. All that being said, I think Arizona's going to win the game if they play.
All those good things.
Yeah. But yeah. It'll be good. That's the game I'm most looking UCLA, Carolina in the Sweet 16, and then potentially Arizona, Villanova in the Elite Eight. I think either UCLA or Carolina playing Purdue. Assuming Purdue beat St. Peter's would be a good game. Matt Painter's an awesome coach. Jaden Ivey's probably the most talented player, at least from an NBA perspective, still in the draft. Give me your final four from now, and then we'll talk about the Matt Ryan thing quickly.
Yeah. Well, my final four, it's interesting. I only have 6 teams in the Sweet 16, but 6 of my Elite Eight teams are still alive. So all of my teams that are still alive I have moving on to the Elite Eight, and my whole Final Four is still alive. So I could be in a good position. But anywho, I have Gonzaga, UCLA, Villanova, and Kansas. Looking at what we talked about, I feel the best about Kansas. Villanova I feel quite good about. UCLA probably has the hardest road, and then Gonzaga I feel good about. So I feel pretty good about my Final Four.
I think Arkansas is the only team we didn't mention by name. They're pretty good, too, playing Gonzaga.
No, I said that it was not a lock that Gonzaga wins that game.
Oh, sorry, I didn't listen. If I'm picking right now, I think Texas Tech, UCLA, Arizona, and Kansas are going to be in the Final Four, and Kansas is going to play UCLA. I guess I should take Texas Tech. I'm going to say Texas Tech. I'm going to stick with my gut. Texas Tech is going to beat Kansas in the national championship.
Interesting.
Is my call.
Well, my I'm sticking with what I've got at the beginning. Villanova beating Gonzaga, and Gonzaga just barely missing out once again.
Right, that'd make me happy. My laptop's about to die, so let's do the Matt Ryan thing quickly. Matt Ryan of the Colts, only third rounder. Indy's in a weird thing where they're trying to go for it, but not really. They're in a good division to go for it. I don't think Tennessee's that good. I think Atlanta's going for Bryce Young in 2023.
I mean, yeah, that's the only explanation, because they're not going to replace Matt Ryan. It's not, I mean, I don't know who their backup is. I saw they just signed Marcus Mariota, so I assume they're planning on playing him, which will be interesting because people were so high on him coming out of college. I'd be interested to see him start a full year, see if he's able to put it together.
Yeah, when they were coming out, it was Mariota and Winston. There was so much debate about who's going to be number one. And now they're in the same division. Winston just re-signed with the Saints. So it's kind of cool. Their careers have been just it's same like Goff and Wentz. Like any two quarterbacks coming out and getting compared, their careers are going to be linked somewhat. So it's cool that they're in the same division now.
Yeah.
Anything else before we sign off?
I won't take more than 30 seconds for this, but I think it's important. Remember the Italian who won the 100 meters in the Olympics? That seemed like a fluke.
Do I remember? Yes.
Do you remember? Yes. Well, he beat Christian Coleman at the World Indoor Championships at 60 meters, which is a big deal. Christian Coleman is the United States' best sprinter. He was suspended through the Olympics for not testing positive, but not showing up for drug tests. Anywho, the suspension is over. He is the world record holder in the 60 meters. So he's essentially the only sprinter not named Usain Bolt that holds a world record right now. And so for Jacobs, who is actually born in El Paso, to come and beat Christian Coleman, I think that really cemented that gold medal as saying, like, hey, this is not a fluke. I'm here, and I'm going to be a real force on the sprinting circuit. So that was the most important thing that is happening in track right now.
Track update for Matt. All right. Appreciate that. Appreciate Justin Wertner coming on. Appreciate Ghost Golf for supporting us again. Ghostgolf.com. Links in my bio. You get 10% off there. Appreciate everybody listening. We'll talk to you guys later.